Well, good morning. Welcome to Crossing. We're glad you're with us here today. We're in the middle of a series on a book study of the book of Jude, talking about the subject to contend for your faith. You know, we live in a world where there's tensions that are rising, and we see even this week, as even Pastor Lanny was mentioning in prayer, that there's tension all across this world, but yet we know a God who is the maker of peace, the one who can bring hope and help in everything we face. Amen? But yet we see all these pressures around us, and we see how it affects us. And what we don't recognize is how it's even begun to affect the church. It's turned into what I've defined over the last couple of weeks is in the thought of irrational complacency. In other words, the church has this illogical understanding of what it means to follow Christ. We look at it and we think that it's all about, we recognize the understanding of following him and knowing him. What's happened is within the church, there's been this complacency that lays in as is attacked into the church, where they literally just believe that you can do anything you want and it's okay, because basically God's grace is a license to sin. But yet when we look at the book of Jude, he is addressing this very issue. And what we don't realize is what we see maybe as a modern day era or modern day situation that we're facing. Yet in the book of Jude, there is an incredible passage that literally begins to open up and open our eyes to see that the same struggle that we're facing is also a struggle that they faced as well. So when you look at the book of Jude, it's important to understand, who is Jude? Well, Jude was one of the half-brothers of Jesus. He's one of the four brothers. And what's interesting about them is none of them actually followed or were considered followers of Christ until after his resurrections. We see references to this in Mark chapter 6, verse 3, Matthew 13, 55. But what he's doing is, the period is around 69 to 90 AD. There's debate on when it is. And he is writing a letter to the Jewish Christians, the Messianic Jews, those who were of the Jewish religion, Jewish faith, and that's their way of life, and yet they have chosen to follow Christ. And what he was discovering was there was a pattern going on. There were some issues that were going on where they were beginning to become complacent and beginning to literally abuse the grace of God. And so he begins, we talked about it in week one, how he issues this challenge that you have to contend for your faith. You have to recognize that God's marvelous grace, it's not okay. It does not give you a license to do whatever you want to do. It's there for when we do mess up, but it is not a license to simply choose to live however you want to live. You still have to choose and fight for what you believe in. And so we talked about what it means to fight for what you believe in. And this thought that God's grace through Jesus demands a whole life response. And so that belief that you have to be willing to fight for what you believe in. You have to be willing to love what you're fighting for. And you have to guard against complacency. And we talked about that last week. If you'd like to listen to it, you can go to the podcast and hear more about it. But we're going to move on in this passage into what has just been a mind-blowing passage for me over the last couple of days, just processing this and studying it into a deeper level. Because it's dealing with an issue that I think affects every single person in this room. You know, when we talk about contending for our faith, we can look at that. Some of us can relate. Some of us can't. I can see this. But this is an area that if you have breath today, if you can feel your breathing, there's any breath whatsoever in you, you have faced this or are facing this or continue facing this. And it's the issue with self-absorption. And here's what I want you to think about. What he is pushing forth is this thought, that self-absorption creates chaos wherever you go. Now, none of us want to think that we're self-absorbed. All of us want to think that we're good, everything's great. You know, I think of others. But if you look in the mirror, there's some form of self-absorption. Is there not? I want to look presentable. I want to look nice. We all deal with this. At an early age, what's one of the first words kids learn? Mine, mine. You know, how does it affect me? I like this. I want to do this. Me, mine. That's mine. He took mine. That's what kids fight about. Why? Because ingrained in all of us is a natural self-absorption. Some would call it self-preservation. It's how we prepare and take care of ourselves, and it's needed. But yet what happens is Jude is presenting this thought. He's saying, if you're not careful, self-absorption can create chaos in your life. But not just your life, the life of others, those around you. And so we're going to dive into that a little bit more. So let's look at self-absorption. What is self-absorption? And the definition simply states it's the preoccupation with one's own emotions, interests, or situation. In other words, we dealt with it last week in 1 Corinthians 13, love. It's the opposite of love, isn't it? It's about focusing simply on myself, how everything affects me. And you know what? We live in that world. I came across this quote, and it says this, and I want you to track this with me. Is that the trouble with some self-made men, those who made them themselves, they're, hey, I made myself, is that they worship their creator. Think about that. The trouble with some self-made men is that they worship their creator. They created themselves. They're proud of themselves. And who do they worship? Themselves. But what they don't realize is that is a trap of self-absorption. Because they begin to think, look at me. Look what I've accomplished. Look how good I am. Look how good everybody else thinks I am. And what they don't recognize, it is one of the tools that the enemy is using to create chaos in their life and in the lives of those around them. So let's dig into the passage and just read what it says in verse 5. Jude chapter 1, verse 5. It says, so I want to remind you, though you already know these things, that Jesus first rescued the nation of Israel from Egypt. But later he destroyed those who did not remain faithful. And I remind you of the angels who did not stay within the limits of the authority God gave them, but left the place where they belong. God has kept them securely chained in prison of darkness, waiting for the great day of judgment. And don't forget Sodom and Gomorrah and their neighboring towns, which were filled with immorality of every kind of sexual perversion. Those cities were destroyed by fire and serve as a warning of the eternal fire of God's judgment. Verse 8, in the same way, these people who claim authority from their dreams live immoral lives and defy authority and scoff at supernatural beings. But even Michael, one of the mightiest of angels, did not dare accuse the devil of blasphemy, but simply said, the Lord rebuke you. This took place when Michael was arguing with the devil about Moses' body. But these people scoff at things they do not understand. Like unthinking animals, they do whatever their instincts tell them, and so they bring about their own destruction. So he's bringing out, he is talking about a group of people who have literally, as we dealt with last week, were saying, hey, you can do what you want. You can, you know, God's grace will cover you. Yes, you can. As long as you just, you ask forgiveness of your sins, everything's good. And you can just live however you want. But Jude is bringing them back to stories that they had heard of. It's interesting because he's taking them back to some of the things that they already know, warning them about the dangers of self-absorption. Because self-absorption, here's what happened. It connects to the common theme of the issues with God's children, including us today. So he's basically showing them this mindset of self-absorption is going to connect you. It's going to bring you into a pattern that's going to destroy your lives and destroy the lives of those around you. So what's interesting about this as I was studying this is there's an anti-pattern going on. So in other words, something that is bad that is leading them down a path of destruction. They don't recognize it as bad because they see themselves as good, right? They're the self-made man. Look what I've done. Look who I am. I'm proud of myself. But they don't see that that attitude of them being so proud and working so hard is an anti-pattern. It's bringing them down a path of destruction. And so he lists out these destructions. And basically, the first thing he talks about is rebelling against God. The second thing he says, when you begin to rebel against God's authority, what's going to happen? You'll be fall into the trap of sexual immorality. Now, this was mind-blowing for me because I began to think, wait a second. Is that what he's saying? He says, yes. And when you start to study, and we're going to look at some of these patterns here in a moment, but he lists out several examples in the Bible that says, when you begin to rebel against God's authority, in other words, you think you're bigger and better than you are, you will fall into the trap of sexual immorality. Now, we're going to dig into that just a little bit deeper. And then thirdly, he says, then what happens is you begin to reject God's messenger. And you could even go a step further to where you reject God's message. And so when you look at this, it's mind-blowing. So let's go a little bit deeper. Before I do, there's a quote I read by D.L. Moody. It says, God sends no one away empty except those who are full of themselves. God sends no one away empty except those who are full of themselves. Think about that. So as we look into this, in this passage, he's giving essentially three Old Testament examples of rebellion and God's divine justice. So here's what he's saying. The first one is that self-absorption leads to rebelling against God's authority. And he gives them the example of the Israelites when they were taken out of Egypt in Numbers chapter 14. Now, they had been out, and along the way, track with me here, they began to whine. You remember the story? They got out of Egypt, and they started saying, this was not a good thing. I mean, why did we get drug out here? We don't have food. We don't have the Egyptians are going to come and destroy us anyway. And then what happens? Here they come. And everybody's like, we told you, they're coming to destroy us. But what, you remember the story? They go through the Red Sea. God delivers them. They praise him. And a little bit later, what do they start doing? Whining. Well, I knew we were going to die. I knew we were going to die. And in Numbers chapter 14, it's interesting because in Numbers chapter 13 is the story of the 12 spies. Remember the 12 spies that went in to the land of Canaan, the promised land that God had for them, that they were all excited to go to. And you remember that story where they came out of the 12 spies, 10 of them said, the giants are huge. We will die. There's no way we can take this. But two of them focused on what? The grapes. You remember? Joshua and Caleb said, oh man, did you see the size of those grapes? God has blessed us. We're going to go take the land. What happened? They started getting dissension. That whining, follow this, that whining, that self-absorption shifted to rebelling against God's authority. And what do they say in Numbers 14? They said, you know what? We need to find a leader that can take us back to Egypt and get rid of Moses. They rebelled directly against God's authority. So what was God's response? You remember? God said, get rid of them. Let's kill them all. That's what he said. And what does Moses say? Lord, whoa, 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 Lord. Find grace. Give them grace. You know what? They're going through a hard time. And so what does he say? Okay, Moses, because your faithfulness, I'm going to give them grace. But none of them will see the promised land. And so what happened? An 11-day journey from where they were to the promised land took them 40 years. It makes me wonder, how many times in our life does an 11-day journey take us longer than it needs to because we're not listening to the voice of God, because we're whining. We're becoming self-absorbed. We're beginning to see how things affect me instead of how things affect God's kingdom and how things are designed to be. And so he's telling them here, he's saying, hey, do you remember that story? That outright rebellion destroyed them. That self-absorption, what started with just a little bit of whining, a little bit of discontentment, I'm not happy because it bothers me, it affects me, and I don't like how it affects me. That self-absorption led to rebelling against God's authority that he had placed over them. And it caused justice in their lives. It caused pain because of their decision to choose to do this. Another example, this is in 1 Samuel chapter 15. You remember the story of Saul. Saul was the king of Israel. God had anointed him as king, blessed him. Great things were coming. And Saul was out on a mission, and he was supposed to wait for Samuel, the prophet, to come and to bless and go through the response of honoring God with it. And Samuel had given him specific instructions that God told him to do. And what does Saul do? Saul gets a little irritated and says, you know what? Samuel's not moving fast enough for me. So he went ahead and literally did the blood sacrifice and everything before God on his own and said, forget Samuel. I'm the leader. I can do what I want to do. I don't need God's authority. I've got this. What happened? Look at chapter 15, verse 23. It says, for rebellion, this is Samuel when he addresses Saul. He says, for rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. Let that sink in. That's a little steep, isn't it? He says, rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as the iniquity of idolatry. Because you've rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you as being king. Wow. He lost his kingdom, his authority that God had given him. Why? Because he thought he could rebel against the authority of God. Where did that happen? His self-absorption. Look at me. I'm king. I don't need to wait on him. I can do this. This is how I want to do it. I think we should do it. You have to grasp. This is a huge, huge lesson the book of Jude is trying to bring through to us and saying that if you're not careful, self-absorption is going to create chaos in your life and destroy you. The next example he gives them is this. It speaks of this, that rebelling against God's authority will lead to sexual immorality. Now, this one was very interesting to me because I was like, wait a second, what does that mean? So let's look at the first example he gives in Genesis chapter 6. He gives the example of, well, let's just read it. It says, "And I remind you the angels who did not stay within the limits of their authority, God gave them, but left the place where they belong as God kept them securely chained in the prisons of darkness, waiting for the great day of judgment." Now, in Genesis chapter 6, he's dealing with the fallen angels who literally had intercourse with women in the land. So he's dealing with an issue there. They were fallen angels and they found it. And it's interesting because this passage is also the passage where, because it talks about the Nephilites that came from that, basically the fallen angels and the women, when they had intercourse, what happened is they produced these heroes, these large, you know, heroic type figures. What's interesting, when you study this, that's where many people get the idea of Greek mythology. The thought, how everything interconnects. But here they are, these people, they're being created, and God's saying, this is not my design. They are rebelling against my authority. And this simple rebellion of them rebelling, they were part of the fall where they came in. We see this in Job chapter 1, verse 6, where they came in, they were part of Satan in the fall, saying, hey, we're gonna overthrow God. We're going to be the next ones in charge because we're better. We're following Lucifer, who was the head angel. And what happens? They were cast into darkness. They're cast out. Well, in that, they begin to roam the earth. And this is when this happens. And God says, no. I'm not going to allow that to happen. This will not take place. And ultimately, if you look at the story, you remember that rebellion that led to that ultimately ended to the destruction with Noah. Because when that happened in Genesis chapter 6 is when he says, I'm destroying the earth. All of this creation is gone. He said, I can't find one man. But in Genesis 6, you see, but there was one. There was Noah. Look at his family. So God chose Noah. But yet all of those beings that were created in that time were wiped away. That's when God also said, no longer will man live longer than 120 years. Everything is changing. It's not going to happen. And so we see that take place, and we're like, no. God's saying there again, that rebelling against authority leads to sexual immorality. Look at the next example he gives them of this. In Genesis chapter 19, he says, don't forget Sodom and Gomorrah, the neighboring towns. They were filled with immorality of every kind of sexual perversion. Those cities were destroyed by fire and serve as a warning of the eternal fire of God's judgment. Now in verse 8, we see this. He's basically telling them, he's saying, hey, this, you see Sodom and Gomorrah, it came because they were self-absorbed. It came because they thought they could do all things. They were in control. And what happened? It brought destruction. As I begin to process this, saying, wait a second, if we're seeing this anti-pattern take place where you rebel against God's authority, what are some other examples maybe you can think of? How about David and Bathsheba? When he rebelled against God's authority, what happened? You saw an immoral issue. I mean, you can go through out scripture and you can see multiple avenues. David's whole family. But we see this pattern that's saying that, hey, you've got to guard yourself against self-absorption. Why? Because if you don't, it will create chaos. You'll start being focused on you. You'll rebel against God's authority. That's the leadership that he's placed in your life. Then you'll begin to, and you'll justify it, thinking you're okay because this is the right thing to do because it affected me. You following? And then what happens? You find yourself on a slippery slope. And this is what's happening in the Jewish community, in the Messianic Jewish community. And that's what Jude is addressing, saying, hey, these people, they tricked you. They've thought you made you think that God's grace covers us, but it doesn't. In verse 8, Jude connects these rebellions with issues facing the church. In verse 9, he uses the Testament of Moses, which is basically was a creative retelling of the book of Deuteronomy. And he quotes that as well in verse 9, saying, hey, there's more examples. I'm trying to get your attention. These are examples. Because here's what he wants them to grasp. That rebellion ultimately leads to rejecting God's messenger. So you rebel against the authority. You find yourself slipping down the slope of rebellion. And before you know it, you're rejecting the messenger and ultimately even rejecting the message of God. What's interesting about this is, if you look at anybody who has slid down that slope, some who you may look at and say, man, I cannot believe they got there. None of them thought they would be there. When they began that journey, many of them, there are many, many godly leaders that we have seen God use in mighty ways. They didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm good. I don't want to do this anymore. You know what happened? They became self-absorbed. They began to look at themselves and look how proud they were of themselves. What happened? They began to rebel against the authority of God. Then what happened? They found themselves falling down that slippery slope. Then what happened? They began to reject the messenger, the things that God was speaking to them, the people that God placed in their lives, the messages they heard on spoken from the word, to where eventually, you know what they said? I don't even know if I believe this message at all. But none of them started off thinking, I just want to blow my life up. I want to forget everything. No. It was a slippery slope. But it began with self-absorption. So when you look at this, you reread on, one of the things we have to understand is that rebellion demands justice. When you look in verse 11, here's what he says. What sorrow awaits for them, for they follow the footsteps of Cain. That's Genesis chapter 4, who killed his brother, like Balaam in Numbers 22 through 25, 31, 30, verse 16. They deceive people for money. And like Korah in Numbers 16, they perish in their rebellion. He's trying to get through to them like this. These examples, it brings death. You think, you start off thinking, man, I'm good. Look at me. I'm a self-made man. Look what I've done. Look how proud I am. But you don't realize that is a trap and you're falling into it. And he gives these examples that lead to death. He's saying, you got to recognize this is not where you want to go. Another example of this is Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8, it says, do not be misled. You cannot mock the justice of God. You will always harvest what you plant. Those who live only to satisfy their own sinful nature will harvest decay and death from that sinful nature. But those who live to please the Spirit will harvest an everlasting life from the Spirit. Now, this makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because we look at this, nobody in here would plant an apple seed and expect an orange. It makes sense. If you plant an apple seed, you get apple tree. But yet, how many times in our life do we plant seeds of destruction, but we want to reap good things? And he's telling you, it doesn't work that way. If you fall into the trap where you think it's all about you and that everything's great, and how does this affect me? You're on a dangerous, dangerous slope. So what do? We have to guard against associating with self-absorption. And, catch this, those who are self-absorbed. This is hard because we're like, whoa, no. We want to love everyone. And we do love everyone. And he's going to dig more into that thought process a little later in this message. In the book of Jude, we'll dig into a little bit. But he's saying, yes, you love everyone, but you've got to be careful of those who you are close with. Because there's a difference of loving everyone and being close. Jesus had, 12 disciples, but he had 3 who were close, didn't he? He was careful. He modeled the way for us. Why? Because you have to be careful. Because if you're not, you can find yourself falling into that trap. And he gives this example in Jude verse 12, where he says, when these people eat with you in your fellowship meals commemorating the Lord's love, they are like dangerous reefs that can shipwreck you. They are like shameless shepherds who care only for themselves. They are like clouds blowing over the land without any rain. They are like the trees in autumn that are doubly dead, for they bear no fruit and they are pulled up by their roots. They are like the wild waves of the sea, churning up foam for shameful deeds. They are like the wandering stars, doomed forever to the blackest darkness. Now, what's so interesting about this is he's giving them examples here again. Now, for the sake of time, I'm not going to dig into all of this, but you need to understand when he talks about the selfish shepherds, that's Ezekiel 34, verse 2. When he talks about the clouds without rain, that's Proverbs 25, 19. When he talks about the fruit that'll be thrown away, known by the fruit, he's referencing Jesus' teaching in Matthew chapter 7, where he says, you know what? You'll know them by their fruit. If not, you'll cut it down, throw them into the fire. And if you do not have fruit in your life, look in the chaotic waves, he's referencing Isaiah 57, 20. So what's so powerful is each time he's referencing stories that they've already heard. Why? To bring through to them so they can understand, hey, this is the path you're on. And that path leads to destruction. And so you have to be careful against self-absorption, because self-absorption creates chaos wherever it goes. Now, when you look at this, we go back to the beginning. All of us have the danger of being self-absorbed. Every one of us. A great book that, just if you like leadership books that you'd like to read, just you enjoy, maybe you like to listen to those fables, leadership fables, is by the Arbinger Institute called Leadership and Self-Deception. And if you've read it, you know it talks about this same process. Am I in the box or out of the box? In other words, it's saying this. Am I focused inward, all about me? Where I see people, catch this, I see people as objects? Or am I focused on others, where I see people as people? Because what happens is, because we focus on ourselves, we oftentimes see people as objects. How do they help me get to where I want to go? This can happen on all levels of relationship. You understand that? It can happen on the simplest levels with acquaintances. Somebody you see in the way. If they upset you because they're in the way, well, they're an object. When you're driving in traffic, they're not people. They're objects, aren't they? They're vehicles. They're morons. They're idiots. What do you call them, right? I've done it. We all do it. We all do it. It's always great when you have kids that are younger and they start repeating you, right? And you're like, you idiot. And they're like, yeah, you moron. You're like, hey, you don't say that. I say that. You know, you're like, oh, yeah. But you're like, oh, they're parroting what I said. But we see people as objects, don't we? It can happen with your neighbors. Man, that stinking neighbor does. Oh, they drive me crazy. Oh, yeah. Are they a people? Are they objects? It can happen in your work relationships. That stupid coworker, the most annoying person. You know who they are. You've already thought of their name. It can happen in marriages. They're not doing what I want for them. How come that's not happening? And we see people as objects instead of people as people. And we get, here's the catch. Here's what you have to understand. This is the danger. The moment you begin to see people as objects instead of people, you are in the trap of self-absorption. And if we're being honest today, if we're going to be transparent, I know without the shadow of the littlest doubt, every single one of us here deals with that every single day. Nobody is exempt. It's natural because it's how things affect me. But yet this is what the book of Jude is trying to say. Hey, you better be careful about self-absorption because it can destroy you and it can destroy your life. Because it brings chaos wherever it goes. And here's what we don't recognize is that chaos, we only recognize, here is if this isn't the height of self-absorption, we only recognize how the chaos affects us. We don't realize the wake that it leaves and affects everyone else. So I want to go back to that quote. They said, the trouble with some self-made men is that they worship their creator, themselves, I want to add to it and say this. Instead of worshiping the Creator of all things. Here's the beautiful thing about worship. When we worship God, we are naturally doing what? Taking attention off of us and focusing it on Him. When we begin to sing words to Him, we begin to worship Him, we discover I'm no longer sitting here focused about it myself. Now we can, that happens. But naturally, if you are participating in a part of it, you'll just kind of find yourself focusing more on Him. You know what's awesome about that is you're not focusing on the problems either. You're focusing on not yourself, but you're focusing on the Creator. Not you as a creator, but the Creator of the universe. The one true living God. The one who sees where you are. The one who sees your hurt. The one who sees your pain. The one that you can talk to when no one else will listen. The one you can talk to when you don't want to tell anybody else. Because you can trust Him. Because that's the God He is. It's a relationship. What separates God from all other gods is they are simply mythical beings. They're statues, they're thoughts. But when you connect to our God, the one true living God, Jehovah, when you connect to Him, you experience it. When you begin to release and say, Lord, I love you. Come into my heart. You know what happens? You feel it. It's hard to explain unless you've experienced it. And the only way you experience it is willing to say, okay, I'm going to let my guard down and I'm going to trust you. I'm not going to be focused how this affects me, but I'm going to focus on you.